Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to another installment of the Left of Lansing podcast as we move into mid-June and things aren't just heating up outside, but they continue to heat up on the political side as well. And by the way, happy indictment week, Donald Trump. This is your second indictment week. Do I hear a third? Sort of makes you long for your many infrastructure weeks, which never took place, of course. But don't worry, Donald. President Biden took care of that for you. Once again, a Democrat had to fix up the mess left over by a Republican. You know, we are noticing that same phenomena right here in Michigan. Democrats have been busy working on the mess that Republicans left after ruling the state for pretty much the last 40 years. And speaking of messes, the Michigan Republican Party is one giant mess. If you recall, last week I talked about how former governor, the nerd himself, Rick Snyder, and a rich buddy of his are trying to fundraise for Republicans in the state legislature. Now, sure, he backed Biden over Trump because he didn't like Trump, but Snyder is just so mad that Democrats are erasing his 8 years of pro-corporate policies that he will do whatever he can to save something from his abysmal tenure in the state. Let's quickly review what I mean. Democrats, for example, have already nullified his anti-worker and anti-union right to work for less scam, and they've also restored prevailing wages, ensuring that construction workers receive a decent and dignified wage for their work. Rick's also having a tantrum as Democrats eliminated his tax on retirees, a tax meant to harm seniors, so that Snyder and Republicans could sufficiently hand that money to their donor base. Rick's also throwing a fit since Democrats not only restore the earned income tax credit, which he and the Republicans slashed, by the way, but Democrats have expanded the tax credit. And why'd Rick and the Republicans significantly slash the earned income tax credit? Again, to send that money to their corporate donors. And that's why Rick and his rich buddies are getting busy raising money to put the nutty Michigan Republicans back into power in the state legislature. Oh. He may claim to care about our democratic institutions, but his actions say otherwise. Rick Snyder claims to be above it all, but when it comes down to it, to paraphrase the musical film 1776, Snyder's willing for the shilling. Yep, old Rick may be welcomed back by some old town Republicans and media types, but the Michigan GOP chair does not want him back whatsoever. That's right, nutjob party chairwoman Christina Caramo told the Republican House Campaign Committee that it's horrific that they want Snyder and his buddies to raise money for them. You see, she blames Snyder for not being bat crap enough crazy, like she and the majority of the Michigan Republican Party are right now. According to Simon Schuster of MLive, and by the way, that's a really cool name, Caramo said, "How do you think the average Republican voter feels that they have a group of Republicans leaning on a guy who endorsed Joe Biden, a guy who endorsed Gretchen Whitmer to help them in their efforts? Republican voters are very upset." The House Republican Campaign Committee declined to respond to Caramo's statements in that story. I love it. I love the infighting Republicans in disarray. Still, Rick Snyder and some of his high-priced Republican donors have no one to blame but themselves for all of this. They brought it on themselves. They cultivated these Christian nationalists for years within the party and are now suddenly shocked that the party is run by these people. Oh, and Caramo and her fellow Republican leaders just voted to change the Republican presidential primary to basically a caucus. You see, they didn't like how Democrats moved up in the primary season next year and were afraid that the Republican Party would dock them delegates. So they decided on some convoluted system where people could still vote on the Republican ticket in the February primary, but more delegates will be awarded based on congressional district caucuses in March. You see, this gives Donald Trump the edge since the party faithful are fully backing their dear leader, and some Republicans are crying foul, but again, they cannot complain. They caused all this to happen. Oh, and Caramo and other state party leaders must pay $58,000 in sanctions for filing a lawsuit that claimed, without evidence, of course, there were voting shenanigans happening in Detroit. The Detroit News' Craig Mauger says that this is regarding Caramo's ridiculous lawsuit before the midterm election, where she wanted the judge to require residents of Detroit to vote in person or obtain their ballots in person at the clerk's office. That's despite the fact that the Michigan Constitution provides rights to no reason absentee voting in person or by mail. Mauger also continues to write in the story that Circuit Court Judge Timothy Kenney described the October 26 suit in which Karama was the lead plaintiff as, quote, rife with speculation, an absence of facts, and a lack of understanding of Michigan election statutes and Detroit absentee ballot procedures. But I think that's a perfect description of the current leadership of the Michigan Republican Party and, you know what, the whole right wing of this country. Their belief system is rife with speculation, absent of facts, and contains a general lack of understanding about anything, really. I mean, let's take Livingston County again, which is just a perfect example of how far right-wing Christian nationalism is harming that county. John King reported on MikeAndJohnPodcast.com about a sad story of a 2.5-year-old child who gained access to an unsecured firearm that resulted in an accidental shooting. That 2.5-year-old child was later pronounced dead. According to a police scanner, the woman at the home was asleep when the toddler got a hold of the firearm and shot themselves with it. I mean, that is just devastating news. However, it is just 1 month after the Livingston County Board of Commissioners declared the county a constitutional county, just like the equally extreme commissioners out in the western Michigan county of Ottawa. Livingston County Sheriff Mike Murphy, if you recall, was heralded as a hero by the right wing for refusing to enforce the gun safety laws passed by Democrats and Governor Whitmer. And by the way, one of those laws was ensuring safe gun storage, which could have maybe saved this child's life. I mean, stuff like this, everybody you know, it's just a matter of time. Sheriff Murphy said that he also would not enforce red flag laws. And this just reminds me of what Livingston County progressive activist Casey Helton said right here on the pod just a month ago. Listen.
As we've seen here in Livingston County with the recent turnover of the Livingston GOP from Megan Reckling's former party of more mainline Republicans, perhaps, to this new brand under Jennifer Smith, who is the new chair of the Livingston GOP, things have just become increasingly radical. They govern like they're in an internet silo, but that's not the reality. You have to be able to build consensus among your community, really, to govern in good faith and to be truly successful and a politician of the people. So I think that Murphy, his actions are really just maybe throwing meat to them. I don't know, but we'll see. I hope that's what it is, because I'll tell you what, if something happens out here in Livingston County where we have a shooting or we have a domestic violence incident where things get out of hand and a woman or a child is killed in a domestic incident or a school shooting, God forbid any of these things, and Murphy had a chance to go in there and obey the law and to fulfill his role as sheriff, and he doesn't do that and something happens, I don't even want to think about that. You know what I mean? But that would be on him. Does he really want that on his conscience? I don't think anybody would.
Ms. Sultan makes a great point, but I often wonder if a guy like Murphy actually has a conscience. Same goes for the Livingston County Board of Commissioners, which this week voted 8-1 preventing county agencies from posting LGBTQ+ events on a county website. According to Michigan Radio, commissioners passed the resolution after they learned of Pride Month activities appearing on the Human Services Collaborative Body Summer Events newsletter. Now, the Human Services Collaborative Body's mission statement on its website says, quote, ensuring a system of support for members of our community, unquote. Now, to somebody like me, it seems like promoting Pride events kind of falls within that mission statement, doesn't it? Now back to the Michigan Radio story, and I'm quoting here. Before the vote, board members listened to many county residents say that the resolution would do the opposite. For members of the LGBTQ+ community, we live here in Livingston County too, Howell resident Jen Slack told the commissioners, and please remember, you represent 100% of your citizens, which includes me, a queer person, unquote. But Livingston County Commissioner Wes Nakajiri, I think is how you say his name, well, anyway, Wes was taken aback by that statement, saying that the resolution does not single out one person or group and that it would apply to other private organizations. From the same story, Nakajiri said, just like I wouldn't be supportive of the county promoting the NRA or the county promoting and supporting a Proud Boys event. Really? Equating Pride events to the NRA, which doesn't care about children being killed, or comparing or equating Pride events to a hate group like the Proud Boys? Really? Again, the right wing's belief system is rife with speculation, absent of facts, and contains a general lack of understanding about anything. Let's just be honest. Michigan Republicans have no one to blame but themselves for coveting and cultivating such anti-freedom, pro-authoritarianism into its party. Oh, and thanks to Distill Social for posting this little tidbit on Twitter this week. They said that Heartland school board officials, Heartland's also in Livingston County, voted to ban safe space rainbow stickers that teachers put on their doors, letting LGBTQ plus students know that they are entering an inclusive environment is now against policy. Oakland County progressive activist Julia Pulver then tweeted, "Why does Heartland School District hate their own gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, asexual, and intersex students? Why are they telling their own students they are not welcome in their own schools? Why are they hurting their own students? This district is bullying students." Hear, hear. We are suffering from a population and brain drain in the state, and we need to find ways to reverse that trajectory. And we have to do it fast. But the Christian nationalist right wing in the state wants to send us back to the Stone Ages with their line of thinking. They don't want to help the state succeed. They want to burn it down to the ground only if it means they get power. That's why I back Governor Whitmer's bigotry is bad for business slogan, and I applaud her and so many Democrats for backing smart policies to make everyone feel welcome and for backing pride events across the state this month. This isn't a new idea. I mean, I remember talking to State Senator Mallory McMorrow here on the podcast back in 2019, her very first year in the state Senate, and even then she knew that things had to change if Michigan was ever to fully recover.
There are studies and trends and surveys out there that say millennials and Gen X are relocating to places that are more welcoming and open-minded. There was a presentation that we saw. I serve on the Senate Economic Development and Small Business Committee, where we saw a map of outbound migration, where people are going. And it's to places like Austin and Seattle and Southern California and New York. And these are not places that are cheaper to live by any stretch of the imagination. And our talented younger people are choosing to take on a significantly more expensive lifestyle because they don't want to be in a place that's viewed as unwelcoming. So I try to reframe a lot of these issues to really point at the economic impact of what's going to happen if we keep losing residents to places that are considered more welcoming.
We are becoming an older state. We are losing our best and our brightest to other states and, you know, to other places around the world. We have to find ways to make Michigan more attractive. That is the bottom line. Now, one way to do that might be by restoring the film incentives program here in Michigan. Alexander Page of the Michigan Film Industry Association is standing by to talk more about a bipartisan bill designed to revive the film incentives program here in Michigan. Now, I will admit, I'm not exactly the most supportive, and I've said that here many times on this podcast. I'm not the most supportive when it comes to corporate handouts or subsidies. So I'm interested to hear more about this, and I will try to keep an open mind here because, let's face it, it could be another positive way, another positive step to stop the floodgates of young Michiganders from leaving. That's coming right up.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast. If you truly want to get Pat fired up, talk about Tigers baseball or how you think the 90s produced the worst music of any decade. You've been warned. Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com and follow him on Twitter at leftoflansing. Here's Pat.
That's right. I like to keep the conversation going after each episode is posted. And you can do that by emailing me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. I'm also available on Twitter. That's at leftoflansing. And then just search Left of Lansing on the gram and on Facebook. All right. So I'd like to give you just a little bit of background about myself. I received my master's degree at Central Michigan University years ago, focusing on film theory and history and media criticism. And I have to tell you, those were the best scholastic years of my life. I really did enjoy that time. So movies, TV, and streaming shows will forever be important to me because they've always served as a way to help me expand the mind, to learn, to imagine, and most of all, to escape. I wanted to originally be the next Siskel and Ebert and become one of the more influential film critics in the world. But while that did not happen, there were many times in my radio years that the movies were always a big topic of conversation on my shows. And I love those moments too. And that's probably why I was an enthusiastic supporter of the Film Incentives Program here in Michigan from a decade ago. However, funding for that program dried up after Rick Snyder eliminated it during a second term after detractors argued that the film incentives did not exactly deliver what they promised here to the state. Now there's a bipartisan push for another film incentives package, this time, though, with some tweaks in an effort to bring jobs and build up an industry here to the state. But will it work? Well, joining me to talk more about this is Alexander Page, board member of the Michigan Film Industry Association. Alexander, thanks so very much for being on. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, can you tell us first what the Michigan Film Industry Association is all about?
Sure. Yeah, we are a nonprofit group. We started about 5 years ago with the mission of bringing film media and commercial jobs back to Michigan. We started small as a nonprofit, and now we have about over 20 board members and have been working tirelessly for the last 5 years on bipartisan legislation.
All right. So Democratic State Senator Dana Polhanke from Livonia and other bipartisan members, because Republicans were on board as well, recently said that she will introduce a bill which many supporters, obviously you and your industry, believe will spearhead a revival of film and television production here in the state of Michigan. Now, I just want to stay up front here, Alexander, and I will admit, as a progressive, I'm not too keen on corporate handouts or giveaways, which I think ended up being the case with the first round of the film incentives package. I mean, at least that was the perception of the first round of incentives. So please convince someone like me who might be a bit skeptical why this film incentives program will not only be beneficial to the state, but will be different this time around.
First and foremost, I'll say that coming into this, what we decided to do was take the old bills, burn it down, start from the ground up. And we talked with other states, what worked, what didn't. We wanted to make sure that we would learn from their mistakes and try to put together the best package moving forward. We've worked with the Motion Picture Association, CPAs, and trying to build a program that has a high return on investment, grows over time, and benefits the state more than the last go around. So that's kind of been our focus for this.
How many states are currently giving out some kind of film incentives or have a film incentive program?
So there are over 40 states and cities that have a program and over 100 programs globally. So it's something that we know is not a left or right issue. This is about jobs and economy. And with that many programs going on, there's something that has to be going right.
Right. I could see what you mean by this being a bipartisan issue around the country, because you would have, let's say, a state like Georgia that is a Republican-led state, or you could see a state like New York, for instance, that is a blue state. Both of those states have film incentives.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter where you're at. It has to do with economics. And the big thing is that we're not just competing against other states. We're competing globally for film production. It is one of the top five growing industries in the world. In 2021, there was over $220 billion spent globally on TV and film, and it's grown additional $40 billion over the last 2 years. And for advertising that helps support that, the commercial production in the U.S. has broke their records year over year over the last 3 years. So just to support that content. So it's one of the biggest, largest groups of economies in the world.
Alexander, you said that you studied how other states implement their own film incentives program. What did you learn and how are you going to use that here in Michigan?
So one of the first big things that we wanted to do is make sure that we are starting with the core of what Michigan is good at. So a lot of people don't know that back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, Michigan was the number two place in the world for film outside of Hollywood. And a lot of that had to do with our history of corporate and industrial films and videos. And so one of the things that we wanted to do in these bill packages for the Michigan Multimedia Jobs Act is that we're not only including TV and film, but we're including corporate videos, commercial advertising, and commercial photography, because that is the blood and life backbone of Michigan production. And it's where we are able to then build the base to help with TV and film.
Okay, so then it sounds like then this time around, you're trying to expand into other areas, not just with film. Is it safe to say that the difference this time would be maybe not trying to attract the big production companies, you know, to make a Marvel movie or something like that? Is this Is this catered differently this time to something a bit smaller?
Very much so. Those are fantastic programs, but we want to make sure that what we're attracting is what is going to hire more local. So one of the big things that we did is there is a cap per project based upon the annual. So that means that it's a 20% cap. So if there's a $105 million cap, no one project can take more than 20% of the overall budget per year. And that means that we're targeting now those $30 to $40 million films. What we're really doing is we want to be attracting your commercials and your TV. So trend wise, 5 years ago, a good example was Illinois. Their production was roughly a third TV, a third movies, and a third commercial production in the state. Last year, they're now at 86% TV because the whole trend has moved into streaming and episodic work. And those are good paying jobs that are for over 9 months. And those are the type of things that we want that so they can come year after year. And those are the ones that hire more local.
Just because this is on the top of my head, when you brought up that 40 plus states have some kind of incentives, that includes our neighbors, right? Like Ohio. And does Indiana have those too?
Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Minnesota. Those are the neighbors that have it. Illinois and Georgia have two of the biggest programs. And the trend is making sure you have a robust program that can compete. So one of the other big things that we wanted to do is we looked at how the programs are structured. And one of the biggest things that we looked at to make sure that we're keeping the investment in Michigan is that we are doing a transferable tax credit. And what that means is that if a movie studio comes in and they have a $100 million project and they get 20% and they have a $20 million tax credit, if they don't have a Michigan tax liability, then they can't use it. So then they can sell it to another Michigan company for 80, 90 cents on the dollar. So we want to make sure that the tax credit always stays in Michigan and only benefits Michigan companies. So the nice thing is any Michigan company can buy this off the movie studios. It could be a farm, a brewery, an automaker, you name it. But that way, only Michigan businesses can benefit from the credit.
Is that different than from the first time? Because wasn't it a tax rebate with the original film incentives program?
That's correct. And with the rebate, that's cash going out. And we don't feel like the state should be in the business of giving cash out. We want this to be about investment. So one of the big differences for the old program was that they gave the same credit amount for whether it was a Michigan vendor or a non-Michigan vendor. And when it became between labor, it was the same percentage, whether you're a resident or not. So what we're doing is the credit only applies to Michigan vendors. That's at 30% and can go up to 35. And for our labor, we're prioritizing 30% for Michigan residents versus 20 for non. And each one of those have a 5% bump. They hit certain diversity requirements.
The way what you're describing here, it sort of then makes me wonder. I understand, you know, the first time around, it wasn't perfect. And I can understand why some are wondering, why are we shelling all this money if it's not staying here in Michigan? But boy, it's too bad that our state legislature, everybody together, a few years ago, instead of just axing the whole program, that they just didn't look at this and say, let's refine it a bit and let's make some changes.
Yeah. And so one of the big things before we go back to where things were was we want to make sure that people know that it's stable. So if you're trying to attract any sort of business or people to come here for moving to create jobs, what they want to know is stability. Are you here for the long haul?
Yeah.
So what we've done is this is set up with caps that start at $125 million and grows over a 10-year period. We want it to be grow and steady. We want people to know that we're going to be around. And that's kind of the big thing from before was the uncertainty. The last time, they were one of the biggest and best at the time. And it was also coming out of the 2008 Great Recession. Detroit was going bankrupt. They're trying to bring as many jobs here as they can. And they were one of the first. And it was a good program. It did what it was supposed to do, but it wasn't tweaked. The biggest challenge wasn't so much that there was a problem with the program. The governor didn't single out film incentives as something that they weren't for. It was just there was around 30 plus incentives that the governor just didn't feel like that was the direction that he wanted to do. So all 30 plus incentive programs, regardless of what industry or credit they were for, were swept away and wanted to focus on a different way of bringing business. And film just happened to be one of the ones that got the big notice because it's what brought people here.
How did that impact Michigan once those incentives were gone for good?
When they went away, they went to other states. People learned from what we were doing. They went to Georgia, and a lot of other states have popped up with their own programs. So the industry has grown. But as I said, what you're doing is trying to make sure you get people to spend their money in the state and create jobs. One film hires 60 local vendors. One of the things that most people don't understand is that the film industry is similar to the auto industry. Ford, GM, Chrysler, they're not the ones building every single piece that goes into their car. They're assembling it. And they have lots of suppliers that do it. And that's kind of the thing where the film industry is, and multimedia and commercials. And what's really great is that they employ all types of people. We're hard worker. We are talking good paying jobs, but they're skilled and unskilled. We hire everything from carpenters to electricians, hair, makeup, lumber yards, the hospitality with caterers and hotels and restaurants. And that's not just the typical stuff with your directors and crew members and producers and actors.
So there's a lot of byproduct is what you're saying.
There's a lot of byproduct. And then the film industry is also on the cutting edge of technology. You can't have one without the other. So what we really like focusing on is the fact that if you film the TV show, movie, or commercial here, and you do the post-production, which is those high-paying visual effects tech jobs, that counts as well. We want everything to stay here, and we want Hollywood to come to us. We don't want to go to Hollywood.
Would Michiganders have a good grasp on if their money is being spent wisely? I mean, would companies just receive their tax credits and we'd have to trust them in good faith? Or are there some safeguards to provide some transparency? I think people just want to make sure that this is a transparent process.
Yes, we want to make sure that not only is it transparent for the taxpayer, but for everybody. We want to have this set up so that every year they're having a full economic report of what's going on, that impact studies are done every 3 years. And that way, the legislators can take a look at it and the taxpayer, hey, is this working or not? Can there be tweaks? That way, after 10 years, they can decide, hey, we're going to renew it or we're not. We also want to make sure that the economic impact is being calculated correctly. We anticipate that we're looking at $300 to $500 million of direct spend in the first year. That's not with multipliers or gross value add, that's just the direct spend. So there's a really good return on the investment.
Alexander Page from the Michigan Film Industry Association is on the podcast this week. I wanted to ask you how this would join in with the movement now that's happening inside our state government to try to find ways to keep people here, to try to keep young people here in Michigan. Governor Whitmer recently established a council that will develop strategies designed to reverse the population and the brain drain that the state has been experiencing here for years. Alexander, do you view these new incentives as maybe just one way out of many ways to help keep younger people here? Not only that, to attract younger people to the state.
Yeah, part of the creative industry and creative economy is where your youth and your highly talented creative people are at. And that's the future. Human resource is the best resource because we can always get more of it. Minerals and physical stuff is going to be location-based, and we can create that location. And when it comes to the brain drain, right now, across the country, all of our universities that are publicly funded, that are already spending taxpayer money, we're losing over 50% of our creative students to other states. That's a massive exodus of our youth. People that are graduating, there's no jobs for them in these fields. So they're going to the coast, they're going to Georgia, and we want those people to stay here. We are in the bottom of population growth and the bottom in terms of where people are leaving. And we want this to be how we diversify the economy, that we bring people here and grow the base. And not only that, what's nice about the film, TV, and commercials is that it's an extension of our tourism. People are still running up the Rocky Steps in Philadelphia. People still go to Iowa to see a baseball field. You know, the Major League Baseball has a game, then a stadium just for Field of Dreams. So we know that there is the pride and we want to showcase the great stories that Michigan has. We have some of the best locations in the country. We're the best. We have cities, we have rural, we have beaches, mountains, waters, lakes, the climate changes. We have everything that filmmakers are looking for. What we don't have is a multimedia jobs program.
And you know, you're right. I mean, Michigan has such a diverse landscape. There are so many different areas that a filmmaker, commercial maker, anybody in multimedia, I guess, so many different places where they could go. I mean, you could get a city kind of feel if you go to Detroit, or you could go to something a bit more idyllic and scenic if you went somewhere, let's say, to the west side of the state or around the northern part of the state or the UP. I mean, it is such a diverse landscape. Seems like that would be another reason why people would want to come here and make a product here.
Oh, very much so. We know that Michigan has a huge reputation for not only beautiful landscapes and variety, but when people have come here to work, to film here, they talk about how hardworking and how good the crews are and the people. And when people come, they want to come back. We know that Michigan is a hot location in terms of where people want to go, but they only go where there's an incentive program. And we're getting sick and tired of TV shows and movies being based in Michigan, but being filmed elsewhere because there's no opportunity here.
Quick question. Do you believe, since you brought this up already, do you believe that our universities are doing a good enough job in the arts programs, you know, throughout the state, even more in our K-12 schools? I mean, it's one thing to lure film and TV and commercial and multimedia production companies to Michigan on the financial side, of course. But if the talent isn't really being developed here in the first place, then it could all be for naught, right?
Well, we need to always continue and build and grow our education. But if the fact that we're having over 50% of our college graduates leaving the state, that means that we're developing high talented people that companies and states want. We've got the resources and the talent. They're just leaving. And we need to give them a reason to stay here so they can be close to their families, be where they want to live. I've talked to many students where they didn't know that there could be an opportunity for them to have a career here and bringing jobs here. They thought the only way they can do it is going to Georgia, New York, or LA. And that's not just for film. It's just for the creative industry overall. And we know that there's a reason that we all love the arts. During COVID, all we were doing was watching and consuming content. It is always around us, and it's what always excites everybody in technology. And so it is something that's not just about jobs, but it's about pride in your state and being able to show that to the world.
I mentioned the arts, but it's just not so much the arts in our schools, because, I mean, if everything works the way that supporters of this move hope it will work, that this could kickstart more interest in, let's say, even vocational schools, since many other industries would benefit from all this as well.
They hire so many different people within this industry, and that's one of the things that I love. So you're going to need carpenters. So we're going to need training on carpenters, electricians, hairstylists. There are tons of vocational training that is going to be needed to help support this. And then you not only have that, but all of the additional benefits that come to having population growth. That's bigger tax base. You're needing more housing, more restaurants, grocery stores, lumber yards. So, you know, the more people we can come to live here full time, that starts then just growing naturally everything that we need here to be a robust place.
But we'll follow along to see what happens here. Any idea, Alexander, when this bill could be introduced?
Well, the bill should be introduced shortly. Like we said, it's going to be bipartisan. We believe that we've got a good coalition of support. Michigan has a great story to tell. We just need to tell it.
If people would like to learn more about the Michigan Film Industry Association and more, especially on what we just talked about here today, how can they do so?
Go to MIFIA.org. MIFIA.org to join MIFIA, become a member, learn more about what's going on. We know that when the bills are introduced, we would love to have people contacting their legislator to tell them that this is something that they want, that they're for Michigan jobs and Michigan economy. And this is just a pro-Michigan bill package.
All right. Alexander Page from the Michigan Film Industry Association, thank you so very much for being on. And I'd like to invite you back sometime in the future if that's okay.
Yeah, we'd love to give you an update what's going on and appreciate you taking the time with us.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
I'll provide a link to the Michigan Film Industry Association's website where you can learn more about the film incentives proposal. Just visit this week's podcast episode page located at leftoflansing.com. I have to say, I like that there is a cap to this proposal, and I like that the incentives this time around are more of a tax credit rather than a rebate. And I like that those taking the incentives have to meet a certain criteria, which is geared towards helping the state of Michigan. And you know what? Perhaps this will help diversify our state economy more, and most of all, help keep our younger creative minds right here in the state. Plus, I would love to see a multimedia industry growing here in our state. Plus, Michigan has been part of some great movies like Gran Torino, 8 Mile, Beverly Hills Cop, Somewhere in Time, And you know what? I never knew that two of my favorite comedies of all time, Midnight Run and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, each featured scenes in the Niles train station. I never knew that. We'll have to see what happens, but I would like to hear your take on what you think about this proposal and whatever else I've said or covered here on this week's episode. My email is leftoflansing@gmail.com, or you can reach me on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Time for the Left of Lansing last call. Now, one way Republicans planned on creating chaos during the 2020 elections was by delaying when clerks could begin counting absentee ballots. By preventing clerks from processing and counting absentee ballots before Election Day, there was a certainty that final vote tabulations would face significant delay. And that was all part of the overall strategy by the Republicans across the country and here in our state. Former President and now the indicted former President Donald Trump had leads in some states thanks to voters who went to the polls on Election Day. But due to delays caused by Republicans, absentee votes, which were more likely than not to support Joe Biden, were not added to the overall count until the next day, or days later. And of course, this allowed the right wing to play its stop the steal lie in a last-ditch effort to help their dear leader remain president, even though he lost fair and square, and which eventually led to the January 6th insurrection. Well, Michigan Democrats are putting an end to that game as they once again have to clean up another Republican mess. State Senator Jeremy Moss from Southfield introduced Senate Bills 386 and 387, which allows clerks across the state to process and count absentee ballots earlier in efforts to get the election results reported faster. According to Anna Gustafson from Michigan Advance, the bill would permit Michigan municipalities with a population of at least 5,000 people to begin processing and tabulating absentee ballots 8 days before the election. All other communities could begin counting their absentee ballots at 7 a.m. on the Monday before Election Day. Currently, absentee ballots cannot be tabulated until Election Day. Now, Moss introduced the bills as part of the Proposal 2 ballot initiative, which expanded early voting and required absentee drop boxes for ballots. And former State Director of Elections Christopher Thomas announced his support for the bills at a Senate hearing, saying that they lead to fewer errors because most of the absentee ballots would be processed and tabulated before Election Day. And he said, "That is a great step forward." Thomas hopes that this will help lead to fewer mistakes and also lead to a less stressful and high-pressure environment. And that is why, everybody, that is why Republicans oppose it. Michigan House Republicans tweeted, "Democrats are trying to fundamentally change our elections today, going much further than what Prop 2 intended in order to benefit their prospects. House Republicans will continue to fight this." Fight what? More people voting? Ensuring a more efficient, effective, and accurate tally when all is said and done? Republicans want the continued chaos because it feeds into their crazy conspiracy narrative that many of their followers eat up on a daily basis. And that's why they're against it. They're against democracy, and that's why, as a party, they are not fit to lead. And it's why, thanks to the hard work of many voting rights activists and the voters themselves, Republicans are not leading. Yes, Republicans may say they care about the vote, but you know better.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. My thanks again to Alexander Page from the Michigan Film Industry Association for being on this week. Next week, Democratic State Senator Stephanie Chang will join me to talk about a lot of things. And I cannot wait to finally talk with her, as she's been a strong progressive fighter trying to make things better here in the state by simply using common sense. I'd also like to say a quick thanks to my good friend Rich for helping get leftoflansing.com all set up and for being on standby whenever something goes wrong. Thanks, Rich. And I'd like to thank you for listening and for supporting the pod. Again, give it a good review wherever you listen to your podcast, and don't forget to visit the website as well. I think it's time for a beer, and maybe after all this movie talk, I need to just sit back and enjoy a movie. Until next week, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.